I'm hitting record.
Are you going to record Dan as a backup?
You don't have to.
I can. No.
No, then never mind. We
don't have to worry about it. Okay.
Flying without a net, then.
Yep. Flying. No net. Here we go.
Now presenting the Webcomic Beacon Newscast.
Welcome, one and all, to the Webcomic Beacon episode, either 184 or 185, we're not quite sure. But whichever it is, I'm sure it's marked in the description that you downloaded this from, so I'm sure you know better than we do. Anyway, this is the newscast for May 1st, 2011. My name is Ross Scott. I do a little webcomic called The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com, though I forgot to update on Friday, my bad. Anyway, with me today on the show, of course, as always, is Eric of Exern, EXIERN.com. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. And also with us today, as a special guest, Dan Potter, who does a comic called Walking the Lethe, which can be found at walkingthelethe.com. You spell it Lethe, L-E-T-H-E, in case anyone, you know, isn't as good at Scrabble as I am. Dan, you want maybe to tell everyone about your comic for a minute?
Walking the Lethe is about a man named Richard who wants to get his wife back from heaven, and he's made a deal with the demoness to do it, and things generally go downhill from there.
You know, like they do.
Yes.
Awesome. Well, yes, it's a beautifully drawn comic, which I know you didn't. You're the writer of it, right?
No, like Eric, I'm the writer, and I work with I've had two artists on the project so far.
Gotcha.
And the current artist, Adwar, is balls to the wall amazing. So
I gotta say, it looks pretty balls to the wall amazing. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of balls to the wall amazing, let's get this show on the road, shall we? All right. So for those of you that are new to the show, this is the newscast. What we try and do is cover news that is as much related to webcomics as we can find over the course of the week. And by we, I of course mean that Eric does all of the work, and then I take lots of the credit.
yeah, story of my life.
So if you find any news that you would like us to cover in any show or any upcoming show, just email it to us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or go to our website, webcomicbeacon.com. Speaking of which, all the articles we talk about will be posted in today's feed and in today's post on the website, webcomicbeacon.com. So go check them out there if you want to read along with the articles we cover. All right, here we go. First article, Happy Birthday Kickstarter. So, coming from very humble beginnings, 2 years ago, as of April 28th, Kickstarter launched over 2 years ago now, in a couple days, and they have given some tallies of how much money has been donated through Kickstarter so far, and the biggest number, a note to us, is that 900,000... Wait, 943. That would be 943,000, sorry, and $118 have been donated to comics-related projects through Kickstarter. Almost $1 million in 2 years. Wow.
Yeah. Kickstarter was just the most... Kickstarter was the idea that everyone knew we needed the moment someone mentioned it. It
yes.
was like, oh, yes, that's exactly what we need. It's a brilliant system.
Really is. And I got to say, you know, it's been kind of talked about in good and bad ways in the past, maybe by some other webcomics-related podcasts, not naming names. But I got to say, I mean, it's a pretty solid system. I mean, whether you get the kind of Kickstarter buzz around yours or not, it's a really nice system, in the same way that Big Cartel is a nice system if you're going to sell merch and you don't feel like building a store from scratch, or you know why not have PayPal handle your payments or whatever. I mean, it seems like a pretty solid system. Now, it doesn't mean your stuff is going to be successful automatically. Like, they don't talk about how much money has been refunded through this.
That would be an interesting statistic.
Yeah. I mean, you tend to only hear about Kickstarter projects that are successful. But they do have project statistics, and they do say on the site that So far, there have been 20,000 launch projects. 43% of projects have been successful, which is this is total, not just comics.
That's pretty high.
43%, 7,496 projects have been successful, and 9,700 have not been successful, and 3,000 are still going right now. So that's kind of where it stands right now. But of that, how many comics? I'm still curious, but.
Yeah, that's good, but still, I mean, there is this perception in the webcomic community that you do a Kickstarter project and you're done.
You're done. It's that simple.
How are you going to fund this? Oh, I'm just going to do Kickstarter.
Then magic will happen and Santa will bring
I remember a lot of comments, I think, from the guy who did Multiplex, who did a Gordon successful McAlpin. Kickstarter.
Yep.
But underestimated his costs, he was living pretty lean because he quit his day job.
Right.
Due to printing costs.
We'll actually be talking about Gordon a little later in the show because we've got some other news surrounding him. But anyway, so happy birthday, Kickstarter. And for those of you that are interested in doing Kickstarter projects, or if you do any, please send them to us over at the Webcomic Beacon. We'd be happy to talk about them and link to them. All right. And with that, we'll move on to the next article. Speaking of projects that have launched, The Machine of Death, which is a collection of stories which in themselves are not webcomics but have been done so far by a lot of webcomic artists. We've talked about them a few times because they've been really good about posting audio book podcasts of their stuff. They've had some really interesting ways of sharing all the information about ebooks and that kind of stuff that they've gone through. Anyway, they're putting together a second book. They're just starting the process. And they're currently taking submissions. And as they say, it is open to anybody, quote, and we need anybody. There are only two eligibility requirements. Any story you submit must be written in English. And you or a legal guardian, if you're a minor, must be willing and able to sign a contract if the story is accepted. That's it. And then they're willing to pay you, if it gets accepted, $200. And if your story is used substantially in any commercial or movie TV adaptation... an extra bonus $4,000. And that's kind of pretty much there's a lot more because they are really nice and thorough in, I think, a good way about what exactly the kind of rules of it are.
Now who's behind Machine of Death? Who's organizing it?
But judging by who made the post on the site, it's David Malky. Now I know that David Malky, Ryan North, and, M. Bernardo. I always forget his actual name, but I follow him on Twitter. There he is. Matthew Bernardo are the three that are listed on the Machine of Death site as being kind of intrinsically involved, but they don't exactly have a breakdown of who's secretary and who's treasurer or anything like that.
Machine of Death was one of those, yet again, I mean, this was one of these webcomic phenomena where it started with these guys. And they just said, hey, you want to do this? And it just exploded out of that just by having the force of all of these established webcomic guys involved.
It was pretty, a great marketing because it went across platforms pretty much, and they managed to get do the Rush thing. And that was effective. Bumped off.
They've had some Glenn pretty Beck. Interesting strategies. And bumping off Glenn Beck was pretty awesome. it was pretty cool process. I mean, I gotta think though, these guys have so many followers already that they can do. They can't do anything, but they can do a lot and just. Shove followers at the problem, you know, that kind of like with Kickstarter, we were talking about just because you do a Kickstarter doesn't mean you're going to be rich and famous. Just because you might try something similar doesn't mean that you're going to have the kind of success that they've had, but it does mean it's possible, which is cool.
Yeah, but I mean, with Machine of Death, I mean, yes, they do have followers, but they also know how to channel these
wield
followers.
Them.
Yeah, I mean, yes. Because I know plenty of websites that have plenty. I mean, I have a fair amount of followers on my website. I can't get them to do anything. So it really is knowing how to work the system and being really savvy about web technology. And these guys are sort of the top.
Plus, so. They are, let's face it, kind of factors of large numbers ahead in terms of the overall amount of following. I mean, these guys had, on this last project, pretty much all of the really, not all of, that's a hard thing to say, but a lot of really big webcomics who have so many followers all together, and taking those numbers and kind of uniting them, I mean, it's just huge numbers. Anyway, by the way, I forgot to mention, the first article about Kickstarter comes to us via Bleeding Cool, and the second one that we're talking about now, Wheel of Death, comes to us via Fleen. And with that, we should move on. I want to, I'm trying to keep it punchy. So we'll move on to the next article. Steven Jackson, who's the creator of the, one of the co-creators of the game series Munchkin, which they describe as, I love this quote, go down to the dungeon, kill everything you meet, backstab your friends, and steal their stuff. It's the dungeon experience with none of that stupid role-playing stuff, their site says. Anyway, they're having a contest right now where if you feature their games in your webcomic, specifically webcomic, then you're entered automatically into this contest. Well, you have to tell them you're doing it, I guess. Yeah.
And I wouldn't say automatically.
Right, right. And you have a chance to win cash prizes, cash monies, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to say, pretty smart idea from them.
Oh, it's great. There's tons of crossover between Steve Jackson's audience and webcomics. It's all that just geek demographic that they go at.
Yes. Steve Jackson's Games is one of the first and most integrated companies to really jump onto the webcomic thing. They have an Axe Cop version of Munchkins. So, I mean, they
I did not know that.
Yes, they do. They released this was in the news a couple of weeks ago, I think. They released an Axe Cop version of Munchkins. Go ahead, Ross.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so they have done a lot with webcomics, and they really see webcomics as a good advertising source and a good marketing tool.
Well, good on them.
I'm really surprised they haven't, like, tried to get to launch, like, Earthworld the Game or something like that.
You don't know Rob Business Plan Balder well enough. You don't think that he's working on. If you don't think he's working on that, I mean, yeah. Rob.
So I've noticed you guys have a little bit of a bone to pick with that guy.
Where, with Rob? That okay. No. Let me.
I don't.
I not at all. Rob and I are good friends. I'm in the first couple pages of Earthworld. I got drawn in as one of Parson's friends. Actually, like. Rob and I go way back. We are totally cool. But the man, like, I've always called him Rob Business Plan Balder because that's the way he talks about everything all the time is as a business plan. And so, and I do kind of pick on him a bit because, you know, he's a friend and I can do that. I guess it's the only way to put it.
Okay.
But Jamie Noguchi, who is the artist for the first book, he and I are co-founder. Well, co-owner, runner of Super Art Fight. So I see Jamie, you know, like every other week or so. It's all amongst friends. Yeah.
Hey, Ross, speaking of Super Art Fight, isn't something coming up with that?
Yeah, why don't I mention that now? That's a wonderful segue. And it's good because that way it didn't sound like I was the one bringing it up, so I like it even more. But yes, so Super Art Fight is... Pictionary meets pro wrestling, for those looking for the quick description. And we are having our first ever tryout show, which means people are allowed to come to our show. Submit now. Go to our website, superartfight.com. Read the info on how you can submit to be a part of this tryout show. We're going to have 16 people compete in kind of a like NCAA bracket system. And then the winners of that get a chance to compete as one of our artists at our next big show, Super Art Fight 11, at the Auto Bar in Baltimore in July or August-ish. We haven't set a date yet.
Now, by like pro wrestling, do you mean it's fixed?
It's It's like actually we are very we've become very scientific about the process because we didn't want to be accused of being fixed. We have a decibel reader that our referee, the Dork Knight, as he's known, stands in front of the audience and holds it up and reads off decibels. And it is, so we try and keep it actually as fair as possible because it used to be just, well, this sounded louder. The audience sounded louder cheering for this person versus the audience sounded louder cheering for the other person. And so we got sick of that pretty quick, and our artists got sick of that pretty quick. So now it's actually very scientific. Now, what happens in the show is a little planned out. Yes, like both of our artists will like plan at our last show, for example, Jamie Noguchi was up against Team Science, which was Caldwell Tanner and Jamie Baldwin, Jamie the Brawlin' Baldwin, and they silly stringed him. He like fell to the ground and then he called forth his giant robot, which was actually Chris Impink. And summoned him, and there was this sound music cue, and then Chris starts drawing, and so that was a little planned, but you know, the actual outcome not planned. It's just sometimes the audience loves it when stupid crap like that happens. Anyway, if you're looking to sign up, check out our website superartfight.com, and that's all I'll say about that. So we'll move on to the next article, another Kickstarter. As it turns out, this article coming to us via comic book resources.
Thank you. Nowhere else to go.
Yes, and a comic artist named Jason Brubaker has been working on a graphic novel for a long time and has just won. He won a Zarek grant, and now he's also got a Kickstarter up trying to launch his graphic novel, which is called Remind.
No, he already started
the Kickstarter. It was very successful. He's one of the successful cases on Kickstarter, and was looking for $3,000 and got $12,000.
This guy is one of, you know, to the webcomic world, he's an overnight success. But if you look deeper, he's been planning on this story for like 10 years, and he's a professional artist.
Yeah, he's working on Kung Fu Panda 2, according to his website.
He is one of this new crop of artists coming into webcomics.
Yeah.
And starting to do their own stories and their own things in the webcomic community and taking and really paying attention to what webcomicers have been doing and taking those and sort of applying them very professionally. This guy is just very methodical, very professional about everything he does, and he's very cool in that he posts everything he's doing.
Yeah.
You can follow his process.
Well, you know, Poorcraft has been doing that too, Spike's book thing, Kickstarter, because I helped fund that, and I've been getting the updates.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about this guy is that he's coming from the professional world, and so it's one of these things where this is sort of a wake up for all of the professional artists that you can actually make money on the web.
Right.
You know,
the other new guy who's professional, who's shown up recently is Ratfist. Oh, what's his name?
Oh, Ted Nampel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ratfist.com.
Yeah.
And I love Ratfist. I've been loving Ratfist. But yeah, that guy created Earthworm Jim. He's doing just fine.
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he's not like that's one of those things that I'm sure like you think, oh, well, he created Earthworm Jim. He must be rich and famous. And it's actually like, well, he's doing okay.
Yeah.
But you're still like, he's fine.
Yeah.
But it's true. He is one of these guys that these are kind of this new generation of guys that are kind of taking the webcomic model and using it. But what's interesting about this guy, because it's been said about our show that we need to cover more webcomic stuff that's really about webcomics. This guy is linking to webcomic stuff all the time. Like, he's trying to help promote Rice Boy the book and other Kickstarters. So, like, he's not just kind of taking our model, like we created it. He's not just taking the webcomic quote-unquote model and just using it to his advantage. It seems like he's actually stepping into the community of it.
Oh, he is.
I think is awesome.
In the community, yeah, he is. He is part of the community. He is a very interesting bridge because he is really involved in the community and really involved in webcomics. And at the same time, he's posting things to the professional print community, saying, "Hey, guys, this is how I do this. And this is how this works."
So he's a bridge.
Yeah. And really, it's a good comic too. I mean, this is the thing that the reason he's so successful is Remind is a really good comic. It's well drawn and well planned out. And something you don't see a lot of, in the webcomic world of something that's just really put together so strongly as far as a story comic goes.
Right. All right. Well, let's move on to the next thing. So, there's a video now. This might sound a little off, but I think it's a really good topic. There's a video going around by a guy named Mike Monteiro of Mule Design Studio out in San Francisco, and it's called "Fuck You, Pay Me." Now, I'm sorry if that earns us the explicit tag this week, but it was going to happen sometime, so it might as well happen now. Sorry, Mom, by the way. She listens. She'll get it. Anyway... so this has been making the rounds. It was found and linked to us via nightgig.com. And it's a video from this thing they have in San Francisco called Creative Mornings. It's a big get together for the creative community where he basically spends 40 minutes saying that you deserve to get paid as a creative professional. You deserve to get paid for the work that you do, have a contract in place, approach it properly, and go about your business in a way that's going to make sure that you get paid.
Yeah, expect that the other party is going to screw you at some point.
Yeah,
and plan for it.
Yeah, and they also and they also say a great point, which is that contracts are there to make to protect both sides. Which
yeah,
is very true. And don't just accept the contract, but actually make sure it's the contract you want to have in place. Because
yeah, that
is
was
what you're going to be held to.
I gotta tell you, when I first started out doing contract work and doing comics, I got a few contracts. And I was talking to a friend. I'm like, oh, I got this contract. I don't like this. And they said, well, why don't you change the contract? And it was like this realization. Oh, my God, I can change the contract.
Yeah. I mean, you might want to check it by a lawyer first. But, yes, you can do that.
You know,
it turns
it's like this is not like Apple's service agreement.
Right. You're not just hitting accept.
Yeah.
You actually have the option.
I can't mark it up and say, "Dear Steve Jobs, I have a problem with this item here. Please change my contract, and then I'll download my song."
Yeah, it doesn't quite work that way, it turns out.
But with any other contract, I gotta tell you, you should change the contract. I mean, the first contract you get from a company is always the bad contract.
It's always what's most beneficial to them.
Yeah,
and they think you may sign.
I mean, and I've said this before, you know, I deal with artists, and the first contract I send out is the indentured servitude contract, you know, and then they complain. I'm like, all right, for you, I'll make an exception, you know, but it doesn't hurt.
You may be letting people see a little too much of your hand right now.
Oh, well, it's not that bad. It's just I give myself the best terms. And
you know, I got to say that it's nice to see that something – graphic design related is being noticed by artists and webcomic people because that's my other world. Half the time I'm a webcomic person, half the time I'm a graphic design person. Maybe not more like 40-60, but you know, like these are my two worlds, and I've always thought that, you know, the design stuff I learn should be applying to the webcomic stuff, but it a lot of cases it doesn't. I mean,
yeah,
you know, like that business sense, it's nice to see it carrying over. It's nice to see it getting that kind of notice, you know, and that kind of because the graphic design community, you know, is kind of this. It's had a little more time to germinate than the webcomic community. And so, you know, there's a lot that I've learned from that in terms of contracts and how to approach things and how to plan things that can totally be applied. So it's good to see.
Yeah, it can. I mean, it's only because it's – I mean, this sort of loops back into Remind above in that webcomics are becoming more professional.
Mm-hmm.
And people are having to deal with contracts, and people are having to deal with these things where before no one was going to give a webcomic person a contract.
Well, see, here's the interesting thing. As graphic design goes, the idea of doing a contest for – where you submit a bunch of things and a bunch of designers submit work and then maybe they'll get picked and maybe you'll get paid.
Yeah.
That's called spec work and designers don't do it.
Yes.
Or no good designers do it.
Yes.
But you have a contest for a thing like Munchkin the Game or Machine of Death 2, no one thinks twice about it. That's a little bit of a weird thing that I haven't quite figured out yet.
Yeah. I mean, and
well, it happens in design all the time, but when it happens, real designers go, no.
Machine of Death 2 is a submission.
Right.
Because if they don't accept it, you get your submission back and you can do whatever you want with it.
Right. Yeah. Well, it is a little different. It definitely is. But it's also a case of just two very different communities, and there are very different takes on what the work you do should be worth.
Yeah.
Well, the Munchkin thing, I think,
I don't think either are being like evil or anything. It's just
no.
It's two different communities and two very different approaches.
Yeah,
I don't think that the Steve Jackson is asking anyone to completely divert their content
right
to it.
Sure.
To it. It's just, you know.
Like, and the thing is, at the end of the day, no one has to submit something. No one has to fill out a contest. No one has to enter. So it's not like the end of the world. It's really not.
Yeah, I mean,
content creation contests are always so tricky. They have to have really good benefits and as well as a chance to win, you know.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. If someone other than Steve Jackson's games have this contest, it would be a scam.
Right.
You know, if this was a brand new website that had no cachet, nothing behind it, saying, you know, put our game in your comic and we might pay you, that's getting free advertising. And that is a scam, and that's, you know, that's not worth it. The problem, the reason Steve Jackson sort of works out is because enough people go to Steve Jackson Games and check out what's going on there, the fact that you're listed as part of their contest, it sort of pays you back.
That's true, because you know, they'll probably list all the contest entrants on their website, and I hope they do. And
they said they would, yeah.
Okay. And so you could almost view that as cross-promotion in that case.
And the only reason that works is because Steve Jackson Games is so big.
Right.
And yeah, there's been a lot of this. We're just starting up. Enter our contest and give us links, and maybe we'll give you money, sort of thing in webcomics. And that, I think, was just the youth of the field, because that is a bad deal. It really is.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, with that, we'll move on. By the way, if you'd like to participate in any of this discussion, head on over to our website, webcomicbeacon.com, where you can get involved by... Please comment on the post, because honestly, we need more of that. So please help us. All right, moving on. We have some quick tidbits. First of all, the Hugo nominees have been announced, and in the category,
Girl Genius Award,
right?
Yeah, but...
as it's sometimes known, they have nominees for Best Graphic Story, and yes, like you said, Girl Genius has won the last 2 years. Which is every year the category has existed. This is in its third year. And the nominees are Unwritten Volume 2, The Inside Man by Mike Carey, art by Peter Gross by Vertigo, Girl Genius Volume 10, Agatha, I'm not even going to try and read that, never mind, by Phil and Kaja Foglio. Foglio? Foglio? Okay. Granville Mona Moore by Brian Talbot, Schlock Mercenary, Massively Parallel by Howard Tyler, and Fables Witches by Bill Willingham and Mark, art by Mark Buckingham. Yeah. It's like they come up with names just to make them hard to read.
Yeah, everyone grumbles about the fact that Girl Genius wins this every year, but first of all, it's only 2 years.
It's only 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see Girl Genius and Schlock Mercenary, two web comics, or considered web comics, like mentioned in this pretty prestigious place.
Now I wonder.
At the end of the day, it really is an honor to be nominated.
Yeah. Now I wonder. Them getting nominated is because both of those the authors of the those comics have ties to the science fiction and fantasy writing communities more than the actual contents of their book.
Yes, I think that's quite obvious. You know, and you win an Eisner when you have, you know, contacts to the print comic community. And I mean,
that's true.
There is a lot with these awards of the reason you get into these or the reason you get accepted is because the people know of you. You know, and there is probably a comic out there on the web that is the best graphic novel story ever written for the Hugo Awards, and they just never have heard of it.
Right.
You know, and there, you know, you can sort of rail against this, but there is a point where it's one guy selecting a award in a dark basement somewhere, and you've just got to say,
you just got to roll with it.
Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit of a Shadow Collective to it. What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll move on then. So Gordon McAlpin, once again, known creator of the movie webcomic Multiplex, also known Mad Men fan. I know Gordon. I have to say that because the only thing I've ever talked to Gordon about is Mad Men, pretty much. He has now joined the Blank Label Comics Collective. Now, the Blank Label Comics Collective, for those that may not recall, started as part of Keenspot. They broke off of that. There have been at sometimes three people, sometimes nine people, and has kind of grown and shrunk in size, and the website has kind of grown and shrunk in functionality as it's slowly kind of gotten its act together. But it's nice to see that after, according to Gordon, a year of bothering them if they were taking new people, finally getting asked to join or getting allowed to join. So now it's Sorcery 101, Multiplex, Templar Arizona, and Short Pact are the four webcomics that are under the Blank Label.
We won't ask him if it joining involved the crowbar.
I bet it did.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he's joined that collective. Now, we haven't heard a lot about collectives in a while. I feel like webcomic collectives were huge a couple of years ago, but you don't hear about them quite as much. There was Boxcar and Blank Label and a few others.
The problem is there's just not a lot they offer anymore. I mean, and the problem is that hosting and storage got so unbelievably cheap. The big thing that collectives offered back in the day,
I thought it was more of a let's pool our fans sort of thing.
Yeah, that was sort of the idea, but I mean, the big one was free hosting and pooling your fans. But nowadays you have Project Wonderful, which you can sort of pool the fans of any site that you choose.
But no, because that's posting an ad and people see it and they know it's an ad. And anyone that's done ads can tell you that ads work a little bit, but one ad never works. 10 ads never work nearly as well as one other artist saying, no, this is another comic that I read, and you read my stuff, you should go read it too. That's how I have traffic. I've never done advertising. I've only ever gone through other friends' artist recommendations.
Yes, and I mean, to an extent there's that, but I mean, if I go to Short Pack, I had no clue that they were still members of Blank Label. The way that they quote unquote pool their readership is through ads.
Blank Label, as far as I know, right now was reformed or revived so its artists could have a table at San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah, that is one thing that I think conventions in the convention scene is something that collectives to me still make a lot of sense. You know, having being able to get pooling tables together, pooling travel resources, that sort of thing seems like a great opportunity.
Yes, and unfortunately, a lot of the collectives have not been very good at leading with that.
Right. Because at the end of the day, every artist is looking out for themselves. I mean, let's face it, we're all here trying to do our thing. And so, you know, there's an element of that and an element of it's a bunch of artists trying to get along and share business resources, which gets a little dicey sometimes.
Yeah, and I think it should be noted that all four of these people are, as far as I know, professional webcomics.
They're full timers.
They're all full timers. As a part timer still, who's toyed with collectives, and it's tough when you're a part timer to marshal the resources and attention for a collective.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Collectives. I mean, collectives back when there were fewer web comics, and back when.
Collectives were nearly essential.
Yeah.
In the beginning, when server costs were high,
Is it more of a barrier to entry? Is it like? I mean, because I think a lot of web comics now saw other web comics and thought, "Oh, I'll do that too, or I'll do my version of that, or whatever." Now, I'm not saying they're all copying, but there is a lot of mimicking going on with like, "Oh, that guy sold T-shirts, I'll sell T-shirts. That guy sold a book, I'll sell a book." I mean, some of it's common sense, but a lot of it is copying. I mean, with like. The way sites are set up, the things people offer, sometimes even with story lines. I mean, why do you think there's so many video game comics? Because one of the first ones that was a really big comic was a video game comic. You know, I mean, some of that's going to happen. And I think, you know, there were some collectives, so people thought we should make some collectives too. And now that's just not a trend. So I don't know. Do you guys think that collectives will ever see a resurgence?
I think they will.
I think collectives won't get to see a resurgence. I think we're going to see companies start to come in here. You know, that because what collectives are offering are the shared resources at tables and that sort of thing, and offering a place with a common theme of comic. That's what the collectives are offering nowadays. I mean, it used to be collectives offered webcomics, and it was the only place you could find webcomics. The only place you could find webcomics was Keenspot. Right. That was the only place they were on the web. But collectives now are targeting niche, and that's something a company can do better.
Right.
If the companies can just figure out that the webcomic is the first step in a very long process, because a company could come in here and say, we'll give you space at cons, we'll get this into a print book, we'll get this into an animated series, we'll get this into a movie. We're going to have this whole vertical migration of everything. And then that would make a lot of sense for companies to do it. It's just, so far, the companies have been stupid about it.
All right. Well, with that, we'll move on. I want to make sure we get to these last few articles. Attention artists, if you're listening to this podcast, you're in the right place, because the American Library Association, the ALA, is having their annual conference in New Orleans, and you can get a free Artist Alley table just by reserving space through their website, which will be linked in the Webcomic Beacon post link. It's in New Orleans. Let me see the date that I didn't think to write. Oh, June 23rd to the 28th, and according to the website, it's still available. So if it's not too late for you and you want to check out New Orleans, it's a 5-day festival.
Yep.
23rd to the 28th.
According to who's the maker of Sheldon?
Dave Kellett.
Dave Kellett.
Yeah.
According to Dave Kellett, he cleans up at these library conventions.
Well, the key to it is that it's books. It's all books. They don't want anything but books. So if you have a book, this might be a good idea.
If you have a family-friendly comic.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Because they are looking for that, a family-friendly comic on something, and ideally if it's something educational or literary. It's really a big place to go.
I think this is awesome. Well, mostly because my wife is a librarian, but you know, that would be a great way to just get into that very large and different space from the normal comic book convention.
Gotcha. All right. I'm like, oh, yes, must tell friend that I know has books like that. Need to do that. Anyway, So we'll move on to a few other quick tidbits. First of all, the DC Comics spotlights the artist's creative process on the Source blog, which is found via Comics Alliance. And you can click through to see a lot of how scripts turned into pencils, turned into inks, turned into colors, with a few different examples, including Supergirl and a few others. But honestly, so it's cool. It's more of kind of fun to look at and drool over than anything. but an interesting thing to see their process. I would like to see a little more of their kind of what did you do in Photoshop kind of stuff, the nitty gritty of that. But you know, it is what it is. Also, Greg Rucka, known for doing the Whiteout series, and unfortunately the Whiteout movie. Which I saw him talk at South by Southwest about that movie and how, like, yeah, he's not that upset about it. Like, yeah, it clearly wasn't his movie by the time it was done, but what are you going to do? He had a really good attitude about it. I got to say, it was pretty cool. But anyway, this news via Comic Book Resources that he is working on a new comic that's going to go on the web, and it's going to be Steampunk Pirates Western thing. Hopefully with witty dialogue. But they use the phrase webcomic, which I think is interesting. That's like a term now in kind of a more official way. Also in news of webcomics, Graphically, graphic.ly, which is the one of the comics reading apps that takes submissions, so if you want to put your comic on Graphically, you could, theoretically. Try to anyway. They just released a Nook app. Nook being the Barnes & Noble answer to the
the product that can't make up its mind whether it's a tablet
or a reader. And it's neither really. But it's their answer to the Kindle, and it's in color.
I love my Kindle, but I don't think I could do comics on it.
There's that news. Go check that out. And finally, and I think this was just a cool thing that you wanted to put in, Eric, because this is the Inkless Metal Beta Pen, a pen that writes with pure metal, not graphite, not lead, but what type of metal is it? I wanted to say it was like titanium or something crazy, but
I don't think they say what metal
it is you're writing with.
Some mysterious space metal.
They think it's really badass that you get to write in metal, and it it does not smudge nearly as much, and is waterproof in a way that normal pencil writing is not. So it's kind of between a pencil and a pen. And I'm looking for the rest of the info. They have a really funny video about it on their site too. So if you've got a minute and you only click on one thing that's silly and funny today, maybe it should be this.
It's worth it. Yeah,
it's fun. I'm trying to think like if art, like they don't say if it's erasable. I doubt it is.
It's not erasable.
It would not be.
It's like the Sharpie of pencils. But I gotta say, it sounds like something that an artist could use and be pretty good at. And it's badass looking, so there's that too. Yeah. I don't think there's anything we need to really say about it. It just kind of is.
Yep, it is.
So there that is. Anyway, that brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. We're at around the 50-minute mark, so we're perfect on time there. That's awesome. Sorry we didn't have the Ustream up if any of you went to the Ustream to try and find it. But we will be coming to you next week as well. Next Sunday at 10:30. We've moved back to 10:30 in order to get a longer show. Hope you like that. Let us know what you think of the show. Just send us an email at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or post over at the comments, like I said, on this post. And this has been episode 184 or 185. We're not sure which. But whichever it is, we hope you've enjoyed it. I've been Ross Scott of The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com. Thank you, Dan Potter of Walking the Leith, which can be found at walkingtheleith.com.
Lethy.
Sorry. Does that happen a lot? Come on, you must be used to
it. It happens all the time.
What is a Lethy?
Walking the Lethe. The Lethe is the Greek river of the underworld that makes you forget everything once you drink it. So stop drinking it.
That's why. Yes. So go check that out. And Eric of EXIERN.com.
Yep.
Thanks again, Eric, for putting everything together and for all of your help with the show. And let's give it up real quick for Fess as well, who could not be with us this week because he's off doing nefarious things at PenguinCon. And Alex, if you hear this, we miss you. So come back to us. And with that, it's been another episode. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We will see you next week, and be sure to tune into all the other shows on the Webcomic Beacon Network. With that, I've been Ross, Peanut Butter and Jelly. See you next time.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.